everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Dead and Married.
Hi.
I'm Travis.
And I'm Ashley.
I think, are you anxious to get into this one?
A little bit.
All right. So this week we're talking about 1989's Society.
Sorry, I don't even have to say. I'm like,
you're over there just making weird faces. People can't hear your weird faces. And I can't provide a description through interpretive dance because they can't see that either.
How would you, what would interpretive dance look like for this?
The dance of shame.
I was going to say, would that be like a bunch of bending and stretching and...
Ew. No. No, there was enough of that in this film.
Yeah. So this was basically your first time watching this.
I had seen it before. You'd made me sit through this before.
You really acted like you didn't remember it.
I did. Oh, but when we started watching it and I saw Billy Warlock, wish I had a cool name like that.
I would say his dad has the cooler name.
Dick Warlock.
Dick Warlock.
Not to be confused with Penis Prestidigitator or Cock Sorcerer.
Penis Paladin.
That's right. No. Paladins are not really magical. Not in the same way.
Damn.
Not in the same way.
I'm sure Aiden would have like a full thesaurus.
I'm sure he would. He would haul out a thesaurus. Like, how many of these can I put together? Oh, Jesus. Anyway, I had seen it before. I just didn't. I think I blocked it out.
That's
I think it was a traumatic event. But as soon as I saw Billy Warlock's hair, I was like, yeah, I've seen this before.
Yeah. His hair. His hair stood out, huh?
Yeah, this was...
You're kind of going for that look yourself right now.
1989, and you could tell. You could tell this was an 80s film.
Oh, for sure.
They leaned hard into it. No, they didn't. They just said, bring clothes from home.
He was also sponsored by Nike. It's like, everyone gather up every Nike tennis shoe you have.
And you know what? I don't buy it. I mean, Nikes were cool back then, but where were the British Knights? Those were the big...
Oh my God.
Those were the big shoes back then. British Knights.
I never recall seeing one person wear those.
I did.
I didn't.
Well, you weren't cool. I wasn't either. That's why I didn't have a pair, but I always wanted some.
I was going to say, never had the Nike been so featured in a film. Like, the only one I can think about was Terminator, that shot where Reese just slowly puts his foot down and, like, uses that Velcro strap. And I think they might have been the same shoes. They looked identical.
Sponsored by Nike. Not really. But maybe.
Oh my gosh. I actually can't remember the first time I watched it, but I think traumatized is a good word, because I'm going to put this in the list of positives for this film. I don't think there was anything before it, and I don't think that there has been anything since it. I mean, I can think of at least one scene that's very similar to the infamous shunting scene, and I would say that that's probably Slither, because didn't Grant make like a big pile of fleshy people at the end of that too?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's the only thing that I can think comes remotely close to replicating something like that. Otherwise, this is probably one of the most original films I've ever seen in my life.
It's so weird.
And because of that, I'm going to say something controversial yet brave. In that, I think this is a really overlooked gem. I don't think it gets the love that it deserves, especially in the current climate that we're living in. I think a film like this is even more important, which is funny, because I would consider this to be a political satire almost.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're talking about class dynamics.
Right.
So, yeah. But I guess politics and class dynamics kind of go hand in hand now.
Well, I mean... You know, it seems like, I guess we'll get more into it as we go along.
Yeah, after you finish talking about your first impressions of the film.
But definitely, yeah, first time watching this, one scene in particular, and I'm not even talking about the shunting machine, the shunting scene. I would say it was part of it, but there was one scene in particular that I felt like, even as an adult, just scarred me for life.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'd never seen anything like that before. I went into this movie not really knowing what to expect and having this sense of unease throughout. But when it really hits, you're like, I don't know. Like, it's first time I remember being like disturbed in a really long time. It, like, me getting disturbed in a film doesn't happen very often outside of Lars von Trier movies.
I don't, okay. I didn't get disturbed.
Really?
Yeah.
Like,
there wasn't really anything about this that I found disturbing at all.
I'm so, starting to wonder what that says about you.
No, it was just, it's like, okay, so my first impression, it was, so for the first three quarters of the movie, I guess they're trying to lay out the story, and it's the guy trying to track everybody down and figure out what's going on. And I sat there going, what the hell am I watching? And then the last 10 minutes of the movie, I was like, what the hell am I watching?
See, that sounds like you were disturbed to me.
It just went from zero to holy shit, like fast. It happened fast.
Yeah.
I don't know. Even the part where he's hooking up with Clarissa.
Yeah.
And her arm wraps around him.
Yeah.
And then wraps around him. That didn't even do it. I'm like, wow, she's bendy. I wonder if Ashley can do that.
Maybe in my 20s.
Maybe.
Now I would just strain something.
Yeah.
Cramp!
Yeah. But yeah, that scene right there at the end, I was like, oh. Yeah, that was it.
It's disgusting.
That was...
Oh, it's so disgusting.
Didn't Lala ask us a question about that one time? Like, what's the last movie you watched? It was just like, what the fuck? Yeah, this was one. This was one.
This movie is so wet.
Like, what the fuck am I watching?
Moist.
Why are they all covered in Vaseline?
And a KY jelly is actually more accurate.
What kind of movie? Yeah, I don't know. I think that was it. That was my first impression was, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What is this? Yeah, I don't know. And then my second impression watching it today was the same. It was the same impression. What is this? Why am I watching this?
I'm sitting there dreading the last half of the movie. Like,
really?
Yeah. Like, because I'm not a very squeamish person at all. I mean, like I've said 1,000 times on this show, I'm kind of a gore whore. But this to me is not gore. This is something else. And it induces a bunch of... And yeah, this film definitely kind of gets the queasiness going in me a little bit.
Yeah.
So, and that's no easy feat.
I don't know.
Especially now.
Yeah, it didn't have that effect on me.
It did.
Which is weird, because usually most movies they would.
Well, because this may only be my third or fourth time to have ever seen it. It's not one I watch very often, mostly because I really, really dread that scene. And every time I know that it's coming, and I know that it's coming, I'm like, So.
Okay, so that's so weird. Because to me, this is so much tamer, and maybe it's because it looks less realistic than when the cannibals all go after that dude on Green Inferno. See, to me, that's a lot harder to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not going to disagree with you there. It's just, I don't know. This movie, and I think I'm not alone in this, this movie's so surreal. It's like just a real in front of your face Kafka painting. Like, it's so fucked up that, I don't know. Like I said, it's just so disturbing. Like, I'm not saying it's worse than the Green Inferno by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't know what it is. And the movie we talk about next week, same thing. It's not that it's overtly just scary or gross or anything. It's just, that's really fucked up.
It makes you wonder.
It just makes me feel uneasy.
Are rich people really like that?
I wouldn't doubt it.
Oh, okay. So, moving on to cast and crew. I think I already said this was directed by Brian Usna,
mm-hmm.
Written by Zeph E. Daniel and Rick Fry. And I think both of them worked on, what was it?
I know Brian Usna.
Bride of Reanimator.
Yeah, I was going to say he's.
Yeah, they both did Bride of Reanimator.
And Brian Usna has also directed, what's the third Reanimator film? Beyond Reanimator. Yeah, he did that. And another kind of widely unknown film I really have a soft spot for is Faust, Love of the Damned. And that's more of his just weird ass shit. He really has a knack for just putting the most fucked up, bizarre things on screen.
Yeah.
meanwhile looking pretty awful. I mean, it's a good thing he got Screaming Mad George for this.
Right. So our main protagonist is Bill Whitney, played by Billy Warlock, also starring Conchetta DeAngelis, who plays Nan. She's the mom.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Ben Slack plays Dr. Cleveland. The psychiatrist Evan Richards plays Milo. He's the best friend. Patrice Jennings plays Jenny Whitney, the sister. Tim Bartel is David Blanchard, who's only in this film for like the first 5 minutes and the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
He's really not in it much. Charles Lucia plays Jim Whitney. He's the father. And Heidi Kozak Haddad plays Shauna. She's the girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Billy's girlfriend, to be specific. Yeah, and
she's actually been on this show before. She was in Friday the 13th, Part 7. She was the girl who ran into Skinny Dip, and the boyfriend was watching her from the bank and got the axe to the throat. Remember
really?
That? Yeah.
Okay.
She's like, you need a formal invitation? You remember that?
And it was
an underwater camera shot of her taint. And
yeah.
Just, and then, kind of a scream queen in herself. She was also in Slumber Party Massacre, Part 2.
I don't think we ever watched that one.
I have. I haven't. Those. I've not allowed you to watch those. That's
well, now I
want to
watch them. let's see. Ben Meyerson plays Ferguson, and he plays a pretty decent sized role, I guess, mm-hmm. in the film. Sort of. He's kind of one of the primary antagonists for Billy.
Yeah, I keep thinking of the character Turd Ferguson on on SNL.
And Devin DeVasquez plays Clarissa Carlin.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of does it. There's a big cast, but a lot of them are just extras that come in for just a little bit. A lot of them are extras at the very end.
I want to give another shout out to the judge. I don't know if you had him pulled up there as part of your cast list. I was today years old when I found out that he's also in a Friday the 13th film. He's in Part 3. He's the crazy Ralph replacement. He's that guy laying in the dirt road, and he has the eyeball. I have warned thee.
Seriously?
Seriously, that's him. I was like, what the fuck? That's crazy.
Well, okay. That's David Wiley. Plays Judge Carter.
So affinity for eyeballs and beauty marks.
And underage girls. In the movie, not in real life. Just in this movie. I'm not saying that about him personally. It's just in this film. Do not misinterpret what I said. So,
weirdo.
Hey, you know, people get uptight. So anyway, let's see. As far as ratings go, it's not good. It's a 64% on Rotten Tomatoes. Honestly,
that's above average.
That's higher than I expected it to be, and a 6.5 out of 10 on IMDb.
Yeah, apparently it performed better overseas than it did here, and I'm not really shocked about that. Probably had a lot of people that watched it and got offended about what it was trying to say, assuming they understood what it was trying to say in the first place.
So I think the idea of class dynamics is a little more accepted outside of the United States.
Uh-huh.
Accepted as just a that's how it is sort of thing.
Right.
And I think probably the rich people over there probably know that they're kind of awful and accept that they're kind of awful. Whereas here you get the rich people who make TV shows and they're like, but what? I'm a good person.
Yeah.
Like, no, you're not. You're not a good person. I'm not going to name.
I was going to say.
Anyone.
I mean, we don't know that none of them are good people. I'm
okay,
just
well,
saying.
The way you see them on TV is any indication of how they are in real life. They're terrible people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on before we get
I say something that's going to get us sued. Yeah. Not trying to keep up with anyone. story. Yeah, let's talk about story.
Come on, moving on. I'm trying
to move on. All right, so the story. What do you think about the story?
I think the story, I think we've pretty much touched on it just now, but I think that this is an incredibly brilliant script and story. He's looking at me like I'm stupid, but I really do. I like what it has to say about more than one thing. I mean, yeah, the rich versus the poor is obvious, but I think if you're watching it from the standpoint of a teenager, I think that it really captures perfectly that those weird feelings of paranoia you get as you start to come into your own and you suddenly feel like you can't trust the people around you. Even the people you've known your entire life.
Can't trust anyone over 30.
Yeah, you start to feel like you're out of place and you don't belong anywhere and you're the black sheep. And because for all intents and purposes, outside of the kind of cold open nightmare that we get, Billy seems to live kind of a pretty charmed life, right? I mean, he's obviously extremely extremely wealthy, and he's a pretty successful jock. He's on the debate team. He's running for class president. Like, he seems like he's got, you know, what looks like a cheerleader girlfriend. Yeah, he's on the basketball team. He's doing well. Like he seems like he's got it pretty good.
Well, see, he seemed to me more like he was a live-in at Saltburn, right?
Oh my God.
He gets most of the benefits, but he doesn't live there.
Right. But like any David Lynch film, it's got the thing of everything looks pretty perfect on the outside, but just under the surface, things are just not quite right. And I love stories like that. But like I said, I think it fully encapsulates that feeling of, I don't feel like I can trust anyone. My parents are kind of freaks. I don't, you know, I love my sibling, but at the same time, I kind of feel like I can't relate to them either. I feel like it's saying something about what it means to be a teenager a little bit too, outside of, you know, the obvious class stuff.
Okay.
See, I think about these things and Travis does not.
I thought, weird movie.
Yeah.
No, I get what they were trying to say, but I feel like it seemed a little clumsy, maybe, or something. I don't know. I feel like the execution story-wise could have been a little bit better. I think we spent... Because they just kind of dump it on you all at the end. You know what I mean? Where the what's his name? The psychiatrist is telling Billy, which his name's not Billy in the movie. It is Billy, yeah. When he's telling him, we're not even the same species,
mm-hmm.
right? We're rich and you're poor. We're big and you're small, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you just get this, like, I don't know, 2-minute soliloquy, I guess, from the psychiatrist where he just kind of dumps everything and...
See, I don't agree necessarily. I think that comes up throughout the film, and it starts with Blanchard of she just broke up with this boy and she's saying, well, he really wasn't for me. And at his first appointment, he's talking about they really don't approve of me. They don't approve of my friends. And when Milo's over there playing basketball with him, his parents look at him like, is that Milo in our driveway? Like, I feel like there's the undercurrent of it throughout. And then, yes, you kind of get the big jigsaw reveal at the end that starts putting all those things into place. But Blanchard, even being, I mean, I don't know how far off I am in this, but even him being Jewish seems like it's like, what did that matter at the end of the day? But they seem to put a little bit of emphasis on that, particularly it's his funeral.
Well, yeah, but see, I was just a kid in the 80s. So I don't know all of that stuff. But from what I understand, that was a thing with your Reaganites.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they were maybe not fully anti-Semitic, but they had a touch.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah. So I think that those things were kind of there throughout, of those little mean things of we're better. And then I feel like there was little foreshadowing things like the slugs in the garden, you know, slugs that feed off and destroy things. And that at the end, you know, when he pulls, I mean, spoiler, when he turns Ted inside out, he's made up of slugs and worms and, you know, biting into the apple and there being slugs and worms. It just... To me, there's too many things, and maybe they were just subtle, that kind of set up that final act a little bit.
So I thought that the initial setup, the first 3/4 of the movie, they're all pointing towards aliens, that they're aliens,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is an invasion of the body snatchers type of deal.
Right.
But I feel like when you get to the end, you find out the whole thing, the slugs in the garden, when he turns the guy inside out and he's made out of worms, all that stuff. It's like they only look good on the outside, right? And mm-hmm. and that's the sort of the commentary on the rich. They look good on the outside, but they're rotten on the inside.
Right, right.
Yeah, they're slimy. Fair. They're slimy and undesirable on the inside.
Or the apple.
Right, mm-hmm. right. It looks good.
Yeah,
but it's rotten to the core.
But I know you don't necessarily agree with me, but I think everything was just set up with such unease and such paranoia that I feel like the payoff at the end really worked. And so for me, yeah, it is brilliant because, like I said, I feel like it sets up more than one thing and has things to say in more than one avenue, I guess.
I don't disagree with you. I'm just saying that I didn't get, to me, yeah, to me in the beginning, they were pointing towards aliens. I got more of a they live type of vibe
mm-hmm.
through the beginning, which is shit. It's basically the same thing, sort of. You've got the one character that can see that, hey, and it is the rich people again, and they live, the rich, the popular, the famous, that are all
right,
the body snatching aliens. So yeah, this is basically They Live, but with a lot of KY at the end. But yeah, I felt like it was kind of going that same direction. So I don't know.
So because you thought it was aliens, you didn't think the story was that good?
No, I just, I don't know. Maybe I think They Live did it better.
I didn't get They Live from this necessarily.
Yeah.
No, I really didn't. And maybe, and I realized that in They Live, it kind of explored the same things about classism and elitism. Correct. And stuff. But at the same time, it still feels like its own separate entity.
It does. I'm just thinking that, you know, through the beginning of the film, Nada, he sees that everything is not what it seems to be.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to tell people about it, but then he's paranoid because he's surrounded by these people and he doesn't know who to trust and who not to trust. And trying to convince people that something's really wrong and nobody believes him. And then,
yeah, I don't know. And then to me, you add in that layer there of it's a kid and nobody believes the kids when they're talking.
They never believe the kid. They never believe the kid, and then they die.
And something else that I thought was a little funny is that Billy is supposed to be the same age as Aiden is now, provided Aiden's going to turn 18 here in a couple of weeks. But there's that thing of it doesn't matter if you get to be 17, 18, somebody older than you is still going to gaslight you and make you feel like you're nuts and it's all in your head, which is what the psychiatrist is basically doing. Like, oh, this is just typical teenage stuff and this is all very normal, and you know. But to Billy's credit, he never at any time says, maybe I am crazy. He really fights this thing.
He sticks to his guns.
Yeah,
he does through the whole thing.
Yeah. And the character of Blanchard also, like, he has gone all out trying to prove that there is something going on in this
family.
He
went full 007 installing tiny microphones.
Don't say 007 to me.
And installing microphones and hidden cameras and shit.
You're gonna make me cry.
He went full secret agent man.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. I mean, like, implanting microphones on earrings, hiding out in teenage girl's closet.
Where did he get a microphone small enough to hide on an earring?
Well, according to the dad, he was some kind of technological wizard. So maybe he created it himself, but it was implied that he had the knowledge for that stuff.
Yeah.
But
yeah, he was building all that stuff out of his candy van.
Yeah, but there is, I don't know, for me, I think as a viewer, what I think is fun about the story is that you yourself question, did I really just see what I saw, or did I imagine it? Did I hear what I just heard, or did I imagine it? You know, like the way the slugs are screaming, or seem to be screaming whenever they're looking at them. You know, as Billy's looking at the drops of water or sweat on his sister's back, and then her back just moves out of nowhere, and then, you know, for everybody to keep telling him that he's crazy, you start to feel like you're going on this journey with him a little bit. And to have these people that are seemingly going up behind him and kind of cleaning up scenes or altering them to make it look like nothing ever happened, it really kind of fucks with you a little bit.
Right, right. Yeah. I think they were just trying to illustrate how rich people can kind of get away with anything.
Right.
Because they've got the money to hire really good lawyers. I'm not... Don't do it. Yeah, they can hire the best lawyers and whatever. They can cover up their own shit.
Yeah.
Basically. They've got the money to kind of hide what they do, at least to a point.
Yeah.
And I think that's all they were trying to show, is that they've got the resources.
And I also really like, you know, he does have a line at the beginning about there being incest and psychosis in his family, or at least in his delusions. But as the viewer watching it, you see what he's talking about, that there's just a weird vibe going on between Jen and his parents, and where it's like she's in a nighty in her parents' bedroom while her mother's also wearing a nighty and her father in his underwear, and she's sitting between the two of them and he's giving her a neck massage, or the way her mother will like slowly stroke a finger across the back of her neck or play with her hair, and dad's looking at her all kind of like, it's so creepy. And then to hear the audio of the tape that Blanchard, you know, has recorded and saying all of this stuff that sounds really awful. Like, my mind just went to, I was thinking of Scream 3, right? Where they insinuated that Maureen Prescott was kind of passed around at a casting party, like one of those casting couch scenarios. And I got the impression that the daughter was, it was something like that. I, you know, it wasn't like you had thought, like aliens or something like that. I just thought that this was just some kind of really skeezy family that
like an Eyes Wide Shut kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they have orgies in their basement.
It's a sex cult.
Orgies with hors d'oeuvres, you know, type of situation.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, where's this headed? You know? And then when you get to that reveal there at the end, it's just unlike anything that you expected to come to fruition. You know, suddenly everything is all wet and stretchy, takes on new meaning. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure that was commentary on rich people kind of stick together. They marry within their own class.
Right, uh-huh.
And also, it's fairly well known that when you're dealing with royalty in other countries sometimes...
I was waiting to see if you were going to say that.
They...
Allegedly.
It has been historically documented.
So it's not allegedly.
It's not allegedly, no. It's been documented that it's kind of... kept staying in the family.
I was wondering if you were going to get that sentence out.
I don't know how to say it. But
in that, too, I feel like there's also implications of inbreeding.
That's the same thing.
Sorry, I had a brain fart. And I wonder if that's where you get a character like Mrs. Carlin, where maybe that breeding didn't quite work out, kind of like a Midsommar scenario of the
prophet boy?
Of the oracle, yeah.
Yeah.
Where she seems like she's kind of stoned out of her gourd, and she likes to eat hair.
She does seem to have an affinity for hair. Oh, man, McDreamy would be in so much trouble. She would just swallow his whole head.
First the 007 comment and then McDreamy. Like, you're outing us right now. You realize that?
I've outed us already.
But no, I feel like there's so many layers upon layers of all the creepiness and unease that's going on. And it makes you wonder just what all, no pun intended, they've dipped their fingers into.
Everything. Everything.
And also, I mean, he talks about having, the judge talks about having a job for an internship in Washington. So it kind of also makes you wonder, is this global, you know, or is it kind of just here in this kind of Beverly Hills region, or if this is like a thing that's planetary.
I don't know. Because he says we've always been here.
Yeah.
When he accuses him of actually being aliens. God damn it. Accuses them of being aliens. I can enunciate. Jesus. And he says, no, we're not aliens. We've been here as long as you have.
Right.
Implying that there's always been the haves and the have-nots.
Uh-huh.
The rich and the poor.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the rich have always eaten us.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. And thank God there's movies now that are, you know, the eat the rich thing is starting to come more into light because... Right. Like I said, I still feel like a movie like this is, I mean, if you released something like this today, I think it would maybe get more attention than it did back in 89.
It probably
simply
would.
Simply for what it's saying.
Yeah. And I can think of some people with TV shows that would have a problem with it.
We're really just throwing them under the bus today.
I'm not. I didn't say anything.
I'm not thinking quite that big. I'm thinking of, oh, hell, people I work for.
Oh.
I'll go ahead and say it. People I work for that treat us every day like we're nothing.
Yeah.
And we're just cattle. And, yeah, suck the nutrients from us, basically.
Your blood, your sweat, and your tears.
Yeah.
But mostly your tears.
Yeah, I'm the one sucking the blood.
Yes.
Yeah, I think now, and I would say, if we can get political for just a moment.
Please
this
don't.
Is not typically what we do in this show, but I would say I think it's been made more prevalent since COVID happened. I've heard people say, you know, that people just don't want to work anymore ever since COVID happened. No offense to the listener. I strongly disagree. I think that a lot of people after kind of the big changes in the world have been more seeing their worth here lately. I think the culture of, what do you call it, overworking, like it's a, you wear it as a badge of pride to overwork, right? That's been the society norm for a long time, that you go to a job and you just kill yourself and kill yourself and kill yourself for nothing. And now more and more people are doing the silent quitting and saying, hey, this is not a livable wage. I'm worth more than this.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that it was generational, right? And because you had a lot of them that you lived to work, right? Mm-hmm. And there was
burnout.
You were supposed to have
burnout culture. That's what it's called.
No, I mean,
no. It's literally a thing.
Well, okay. So like the people that raised me, you lived to work, right? And there's a certain amount of sort of responsibility, and it's like you owe your employer something for employing you.
Yes.
Right. So you live to work. And now the attitudes have kind of changed where I work so that I can live.
Yes.
I don't live for this company.
Right.
Right. And as far as being paid what they're worth, I don't know about that. It's hard to determine that to me, because I've been in management, so I've seen both sides, right? Uh-huh. I've seen both sides of it.
Except you were that rare member of management that actually worked.
I did. I think a part of it is, and I don't want to name the company that I worked for because they have big lawyers, but I know what kind of money they made at the end of the year as a company, what kind of money they made. And I thought, you know, if they could have taken 5% of that, reinvested it into the employees in the company and given a meaningful wage increase to all these people.
Yes.
All these people that are doing all the grunt work. And it would have been a huge deal for them, and it really wouldn't have impacted them much at all. I mean, yes, you would have been talking about millions of dollars. This is true. But when you're talking about millions of dollars coming out of billions of dollars, would they even notice?
Right.
The difference is I don't get to take my seventh cruise this year if I do that. I can only take six.
I know. Yeah.
It's like, exactly. Jesus. My heart bleeds for you.
Yeah.
I think that's it. I think it's more of excuse me. You look at what the top really has, and they're completely goddamn, I'm getting choked up about it. Completely unwilling to sacrifice any of that to improve the lives of the people who make their lifestyle possible. Mm-hmm. I was always when I was a manager, I had to talk to the managers that worked for me about it. Because they would kind of get down on the people that work there sometimes. Like, you understand that you get to walk around in your morning carrying your coffee cup around because these people are doing what they do. Mm-hmm. Like, the people at the bottom, the people you're pissed off at, the people you think are not working hard enough, the only reason you get to live your lifestyle is because they come to work every day and do their job.
Exactly.
If they didn't come to work every day and do their job, you don't have a job anymore. I don't need you without them. Mm-hmm. So the people at the bottom make life possible for the people at the top. Unfortunately, the people at the top tend to forget that.
Yes.
That's the thing.
Like, it really... We as parents, we have really pushed education on Aiden, because unfortunately we got a couple of people sitting here that didn't go to college, more like got trades.
I had to learn my shit the hard way.
Yeah. Well, I it's not unfair to say that back when we were first starting off in the world, that you could still get a job that went somewhere without having to have a degree. And nowadays it's like almost everything worth its salt, you have to have a degree for.
Well, I have tons and tons and tons of experience in a specific industry, and I was very successful in that industry. But when I transitioned out of that, I found out very quickly that since I don't have college, none of that experience matters.
Right.
However, if I had zero experience, but I had a degree, even in the same field, then I would be competitive.
Right.
With no experience.
Yeah. I don't get it. But I feel like we see the behavior of the people in this film in our everyday lives. I mean, I don't think, I don't care. I'm at an age now where I just straight don't give a fuck what I say anymore. But I'm with the attitude now that I think it is unfair for somebody to sit behind a desk and look at a computer monitor or stare at their, or be on their phone all day or in meetings all day long. And I'm using air quotations around meetings. And then they chew the ass of the people who are out there actually working and grunting. And let's face it, healthcare is one of the hardest jobs you can have. Healthcare, anything in the service industry, those are some of the toughest jobs out there. And I feel like upper management, unless you've done the job, I feel like you can't, I mean, I'm not trying to offend anyone, I'm really not. But if you go in there with just a degree and you don't have any experience doing what these people are doing every day, I don't really feel like you have a place to tell them how to do their job. I think that that's that's unfair.
I feel like the education has value.
It does.
We don't want to throw it out there that we feel like that education doesn't have value.
No, otherwise we wouldn't be pushing our
children to it. It absolutely does. However, there are things that you do learn doing a job yourself that they can't teach in school.
Right. I agree.
The industry that I was in before, I saw a lot of them come through with business degrees and a lot of them fell really fast because what we were doing was on such a huge scale. They don't teach that.
Right.
They don't teach how these things work. Just the logistics of it. Like you've got a basic, well, if I do this, then this, then this, and that should work because that's what it said in my textbook. And that's fine. But we're not dealing with that specific thing. We're dealing with 350 people.
Mm-hmm.
Not this. It's on a totally different scale than what you learned. So things have to change from what you learned to the way we're really doing it.
Right.
So I feel like it has value, but you have to be willing to adapt what you've learned to your current circumstances.
But
in the real world.
The other side of that is that I have worked for people who came up from having my job before. And I feel like in that position, you have a certain level of empathy and compassion that somebody who's never done it before doesn't necessarily have. And a lot of those people kind of seem like sociopaths.
Well, I'm a firm believer that if you, no matter what your degree is, if you're coming in with no experience, you should just get in the trenches and learn it. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah.
You should get hands-on experience with what's actually happening, especially if you're going to be the one in charge. Like, it's really not fair to tell somebody they're not doing the thing that they do fast enough if you don't even know how to do it.
Exactly.
Learn how to do it. And when I was in leadership, that's what I did. I wanted to go learn how to do it so I could take your excuses away.
Yeah. For example,
sounds like a real dick move, but like you draw blood, right? So if I'm telling you need to have it done in 7 minutes, but the fastest I can get is 9, then maybe we need to reevaluate 7 minutes.
Right. Or.
But if the standard is seven minutes.
How is that person going to feel when they're hunched over 15 to 16 minutes?
I understand. I understand. But what I'm saying is if the standard is 7 minutes, I can do it in 5 and you're doing it in 9, then there's no reason you shouldn't be able to get to 7. Does that make sense?
So I see what you're saying, but I still think there's a lot of variables there.
But I get it. I'm just using yours as an example.
Yeah.
Just breathe. All I'm saying is that if you're going to be in charge of something, you should know and have hands-on experience with what they're doing.
Yes, I would agree.
Got way off topic.
No, we're not. No, I really don't feel like we are. I feel like
but that's I feel like, saying that. So I guess to bring it back into that is that I feel like a lot of times they don't understand what they're asking you to do.
Yeah.
Like they sort of inherited this position, right? Or they inherited their wealth and they have no idea what it took to actually get it.
Right. Yeah.
And a lot of the old money's gone, right? The old money that they worked for it. They made their own business and they did all these things and they did it with a full understanding of this is what it takes to be successful and make the kind of money that I have now. You jump forward 5 generations. Now they just have the money that was all built off the sweat of the person that came before them. And they just have just always had money.
Right.
And they don't have any idea what it took to get to where they are now.
Yeah.
So
that person that started the company you can't mention, I would imagine that starting from the ground up was an entirely different experience.
Totally different animal.
Than the people that are running it now.
Completely different. Yeah. But that's when you get into movies like Society, you have these people that say, we've always been here. They've just been rich. They don't know anything else.
Mm-hmm.
They may not know what it's like to have to work to get to that.
Right.
They've just always been this. I've always been at the top and you've always been at the bottom.
Yeah.
And this is the way of the world.
Yeah. It makes me think of shows like, I'm going to age myself a little bit here, but it makes me think of shows like The Simple Life, where you had the heiresses coming in and doing menial labor for fun, in their case, and just deciding to, and the reason I think about this is because I saw a meme about it the other day. Of them calling in like, hey, gorgeous, we just don't feel like coming in today. Okay, bye. You know, and it's like, what would that be like? To be like, I have so much money that I don't have to worry about doing anything for the rest of my life except showing up.
Yeah. But they don't even have to do that.
Yeah.
They don't even have to show up. They can just stay in bed all day.
I mean, those people that you were throwing under a bus a minute ago, say what you will, but those people hustle. They have their fingers in everything.
They hustled with somebody else's money that they didn't earn.
They're earning.
They may be earning some money now, but you know what? Fuck it. Donald Trump's a self-made man. He's self-made with several $1 million of his daddy's money.
Right.
He didn't work for shit. He was given millions of dollars.
What was that quote? I got a small loan of $1 million.
Guess what I could do with a small loan of $1 million, motherfucker?
Retire?
Jesus.
retire, because that's what I would do.
You don't get to start off with millions of dollars and then I'm going to make perfume or some bullshit.
Yeah.
And then say, look at how hard I work. No, you didn't. You took all that money you already had and hired other people to do it and stuck your name on it. Fuck you.
You know, that's true. You have a point.
You didn't do shit but put your name on it. You signed some papers. Actually, you probably didn't. You probably paid a lawyer to do that. Kiss my ass.
Yeah. And the thing about it...
No offense to the lawyer.
The thing that really grinds my gears about it...
Oh, you said the thing.
I said the thing. Is that I still feel like we're being laughed at as a class. You know, like to this day. And there's... To just the regular person's eye, if you come to our house, we have like a brick 4-bedroom house, which we got off the back of
me,
of the career that Travis had before. And we had not known, I don't want to use the word wealth because it's not like we were rich, but it took 20 years of really hard working for him to put us in a position where we could get said house. And now we're treading water just to be able to try to maintain that for our children. And it, you get like, and maybe that's where Billy's paranoia comes in, right? Because you feel like you're kind of a puppet to somebody else's strings, and they're telling you, or they're maneuvering you to what you have to do to maintain just to be able to live, right? And
but it's true though.
It is. I mean, I feel like, I mean, I'm not trying to be dramatic, but it almost feels like we're just puppets to some grand master.
Well, everybody's gonna say you have a choice, and you do to an extent. But I feel like if you're just a working slob like us, like, yeah, you either do that job for the money they'll pay you, or you quit and go find something else.
Yeah,
like those are kind of your choices.
Yeah.
So, and everybody's gonna say, well, start your own business. I've seen way too many epically failed small businesses,
especially in the last 4 years.
And you know what they are? You know what they are after they've decided to be their own man and start their own business? In massive debt. That's what they are.
Not in every case. I would say. But I you have to have a, you have, you
kinda
have a brain.
But you kind of have to have money.
A mind for business.
You kind of have to have money to do that to start with.
Right. Small loan of $9,000.
No, you get a franchise for $10,000.
Yeah, that's it. I was trying to think of what he said.
What was it, Justin?
Anyway.
Oh, we've gotten so many miles out of that one.
But it's just, you know, everybody tells you, you know, you should be thankful for what you have because it could be worse. And I'm not disputing that at all. It can always be worse. But at the same time, in the climate that we live in, I don't think it's uncommon for the majority of us regular, just middle class people to wake up in a cold sweat at night going, fuck, how am I going to pay off my debt this month? You know, I think there's a lot of us that go to bed anxious and feel like we have to pull those extra shifts in order to just buy groceries now, because to buy groceries for a family of five is fucking insane.
Yeah. Which, back to the movie.
We're still talking about the movie. We're talking about classism here.
We are. But these people, the people in the film, the rich people in the film, clearly don't feel the same struggles that everyone else does.
Right.
So you're talking about the cost of living going up. For them, I don't know. I mean, groceries going up a little bit, big deal to Billy. Well, probably not. No, because he lived at Saltburn. But they wouldn't notice those things.
No.
All those things are beneath them.
Yeah. So it's just to see it in the case of the shunting, to see it brought to life literally is, yes, it's satirical and it's so over the top and wacky that I would guess that most viewers just watching it on the surface are probably like, can't take it seriously. But if you're someone who is more empathetic, like myself, maybe that's why I found it as disturbing as I do.
Well, I mean, he directed it, he didn't write it. They were just illustrating the rich feeding off of the poor.
Yeah.
Because that's, in this film, that's kind of what we are to them. That's what the poorer people are to them. Their food and entertainment.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, they were basically eating him and fucking him at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not wrong.
Yeah, because they were getting off on it.
They were.
Which I feel is probably...
Literally.
Which is probably pretty realistic, but...
Yeah, yeah. So to get to the end of the story, I feel like it's really cool to kind of, even if it's in some small way, to see the man get his just a little bit. Is it going to put a stop to it? No, it's going to keep going and keep going and keep going. But to see Billy get maybe that one small victory, that was rewarding a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, don't you just want to ram your fist up somebody's ass and turn them inside out?
Yeah. No.
No.
No. Never had the urge to put my fist in someone's ass. Can honestly say that's never gone through my brain. Man, would I like to stick my fist up? No.
So, on that note, let's move on to special effects. Let's
move on to special effects. What a way to end a topic.
This is obviously a tour de force in terms of special and practical effects. Do they all hold up? No. There's some that are pretty awful. But there's some of them that I would say are just straight nightmare inducing. Like, and I believe that Brian Yuzna said that some of the imagery was straight from his nightmares, and I can totally understand that. So anything you wanna start with?
I don't know. I feel like most of the effects are in that last little bit of the movie.
Not all of them.
Most of them are in the back end of the movie. The girl that can hug twice. that was interesting. The shower scene where the sister's in there and...
See, not at the end of the movie.
No, it was at the beginning. But you don't really get to see it. You see it through frosted shower door glass. Where her top half, she's like, she needs to scrub her ass, so she just twists her top half around backwards.
Wouldn't that be so convenient?
It really would be.
I haven't washed my ass so much easier now.
It would be so much easier. I wouldn't have to hurt my shoulder.
Yeah, that weird spot in my back that I can't get.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of like those old toothpaste commercials where the guy can just flip his head back to hit the back of his
teeth. Oh, yeah, the Reach toothbrush. Yeah. You got a flip top head. He's a Pez dispenser. Yeah, I mean, there's some through the film, but the ones that, I mean, the star of the show is at the end,
right?
Obviously. Right. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's part of it that was really good. I think the visuals with the red lighting, and I understand why they did the red lighting, because I feel like you could see the zipper if they hadn't changed the lighting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're going to be able to see the threads on the costume, but...
But it's also smart.
I think it added some ambiance to it, made the scene a little more sinister, so the lighting was pretty good. It was very wet. And even when it just looks like skin with slime coming off of it, because of the lighting, you couldn't tell, is that just KY that they're moving around, or is it like the skin liquefying and they're pushing it around?
Yeah.
Right. And then where it's obviously a hand underneath some stretched whatever that looks like skin. But with the red lighting and the moistness of it, it did look a little creepy, you know, when they were attaching their mouths. And I thought that was interesting. It wasn't just that they were like, I thought they were going to bite him, you know, that they were just going to start eating him, but they didn't. They like their mouths grew into him, into his skin or whatever. So their mouths were just literally attached to his body.
Like a hose attachment.
And they were sucking him dry. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how to follow that statement. That's something I never thought I'd say on this show. So there were parts of it that was done pretty well. There were parts of it that looked kind of like Beetlejuice, sort of special effects. And then part of it, there were a couple of shots there with the mouth attachment thing where it was like, the rubber is you missed some glue there. You know,
I wouldn't go that far.
I don't know.
I'll say like personally, I think the shunting scene is a masterclass of special effects. I don't really see any faults with it, except for one thing. There's a scene where the judge is kind of, he's the blobby and he's got a cigar hanging out of his face so that you know who it is still. He kind of reminds me of that pizza thing in Spaceballs. What it was?
Pizza the Hut.
Yes, that's what it made me think of. And then when it's kind of revealed that Nan and I can't remember the sister's name, Jen, where Nan and Jen are like morphed into one body, and then she's just kind of standing there. She's got like man arms as her legs. Let me finish.
It was the dad's arms.
Okay. That, to me, that one looks pretty not good. Like, there's some shots of that. Like, if it's a tight shot of the face, then obviously it's the actor or whatever. But when it's a full frame shot, then it looks like dummies or something. And it looks pretty awful.
The butthead shot didn't look very good either.
I don't know. I thought the butthead one was pretty good.
It was funny, but it didn't look very good.
I thought it it looked good, but like even the hand as the head, that one looked really good for what that was too. I don't know how they pulled that off. If you try to look for a lot of special features stuff on this, you really can't find much of anything.
Screaming Mad George does not give up his secrets.
I love Screaming Mad George's work. Like, I think he's been on this show a few times in some of the films we've covered. And yeah, he always just has the most surrealistic, disturbing, moist film effects that, you know, and I think that there are a lot out there that are really good. And I would say he deserves his place among them. But I really think that he's kind of unparalleled as far as this type of special effect goes. I would almost say I'm getting to a point now where I can tell if something is his work or not.
He and Savini are sort of the godfathers of effects in B-horror movies, I think.
Yeah. I was thinking, I don't really remember anything being super gross until, like, Hellraiser, The Fly, stuff of that level where it's like, maybe it's the body horror stuff, you know?
I guess what I mean by that, though, is that both of them have made their name doing pretty awesome effects on movies that didn't have a budget to begin with. Doing a whole lot with very little.
Right.
I think they've both sort of mastered that skill.
Mm-hmm.
So. Are we moving on?
I guess so.
To acting? Was there any?
Gosh, he's such a snob, guys. Excuse him.
I'm not a snob.
He is.
Maybe. Okay, so for me personally, I feel like the acting is pretty well par for an 80s horror movie. Nothing exceptional, nothing. I don't know. The girlfriend. Billy's girlfriend, it wasn't good. Her acting wasn't good. But, I mean, she may have been directed to act that way. I don't know. In some of these movies, it's hard to tell, right? It's hard to tell, was it the actor, actress making a choice and just that poor line delivery? But I know that we've seen examples of other films where the director, like, all right, they give specific direction, deliver the line this way. So they do it. And then, you know, maybe there was regret after. I don't know.
I feel like you can tell a difference. If I'm going to watch a film, or if I'm going to watch this film and say I pair it up with Bringing It Back Up, Friday the 13th Part 3, where there is atrocious acting, I feel like it's much more obvious. And there are a lot of 80s horror films out there where the line delivery is awful. Friday the 13th Part 3 is probably one of my least favorite of that franchise, simply because I cannot stand to hear some of the line delivery in that film. But this one, other than maybe the Ted Ferguson guy kind of just chewing the scenery and really getting into it, nothing stood out to me as a bad performance. Were there a couple of weird line deliveries?
Yeah.
Particularly by the character of Milo? Sure.
Yeah.
But overall, this was not one that I sat and watched and thought, oh my God, this is the worst performance I've ever seen in a film.
You didn't have a garbage day.
Yeah, no. See, that's what I'm saying. You should be able to tell the difference by now.
I did not hit her.
I did not. Yeah, you should be able to tell a difference by now.
And I can tell a difference. Hey, maybe that was it. It was just the line delivery on a couple of them was kind of,
Yeah.
But okay, in defense of some of those line deliveries, there were a lot of people in this film that if you look at their filmography, this was their first film. And they may have only done one or two after this. They didn't all go on to do Baywatch, people. They didn't.
Or soap operas.
Or soap operas. So, yeah, for some of them, this was their first outing.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
but in the case of the actress that played Clarissa, I think she was a Playboy Playmate before this.
Yeah, something like
that. And she did a great job as far as I'm concerned. Her line delivery wasn't bad. And I think she played kind of weird, kooky, offbeat really well. I mean, just that whole thing of how would you like your tea with cream, sugar, perhaps you want me to pee in it or something. Like, that's so weird. And I think if you weren't delivering that in a certain way, it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think everybody did a good job. And Billy Warlock in particular, I really believed him the entire time. Maybe it's because they kept him soaking wet with sweat through the entire film. I really believed that he was just kind of paranoid and hanging on by the edge, you know? So.
Okay.
No, for me, on my part, there's no stones to throw at any performances.
Okay. All right. Score.
Score.
Felt kind of generic to me.
Of course you're going to say that.
Go for it. No, you go.
I felt like it was really creepy. I felt like for certain scenes, and I know Travis has said this a time or two before, for what the scene was trying to present, I felt like it was doing a good job of that. But never, ever, ever will I be able to listen to Blue Danube the same way again, because it's always going to elicit this film for me. And, you know, in the past, I used to think of that Looney Tunes episode of the swans and the one little loon duckling and him following behind trying to be part of the group, trying to be one of its babies and get smacked on the ass and sent away. That was what I always associated that song with. But now I'm going to associate it with a bunch of people stuck together in a meat orgy. So
see, we just keep saying things that we never thought we would say. Meat orgy.
Yeah. And then there's, like, in that scene, in the shunting scene in particular, I felt the score was used really good to be this kind of like carnival or circus type thing, where it was, the score was almost as over the top as the scene itself. So what was done with it, I thought worked really well. I was it anything, you know, to write home about? No, but I thought with what they did, it worked very well.
Okay.
See, you just got to elaborate a little, man. Just elaborate a little.
I guess I missed. Was it Clair de Lune at the end?
Is that the name of it? Or
I think so.
I thought it was Blue Danube.
I don't know my classical music. So anyway. yeah, I mean, I get that one. I don't, when I say generic, I feel like all the music in the film, your background music or whatever.
That's a polite way for him to say he wasn't paying attention to the music.
Did a serviceable job of matching sort of what was happening on screen, right? None of it stood out as being like, why do they have that music there? But none of it stood out like, oh, that's really good. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I guess that's
and if you're going in terms outside of music to just the sound design of the movie, perfection.
I feel like at the end,
absolute perfection.
I think at the end they needed more squenchy noises. Because that would have been just a slurp fest.
I think it was squenchy enough. It had enough squench.
Okay. So this brings us to, quote, kill and scene.
You don't know yours, do you?
I do.
You do? Okay, I'm going to let you go first.
Why?
Because
I have to look them up. You know that?
I'm going to let you finish. Yeah. But Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time.
Well, all right then. So I think for quotes, although the one, do you want me to pee in it? That's pretty good. It's a pretty good quote. No, the one is when Billy is talking to Dr. Cleveland and he asks him how he feels about his family in light of all his recent victories with the debate team and basketball. And he's doing really well in life. He's feeling successful. And he says, nothing. I don't think about them. They don't think about me. We're just one big happy family, except for a little incest and psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, what an odd line to have in a film. And he just rolls it out there, just nonchalant, a little incest and psychosis. It's so weird. Mm-hmm. Kill, I have to go with Blanchard because it was weird. It was fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
You don't look at me like that. That wasn't mine.
Never mind.
Why are you giving me that?
I know. For a second, I thought that was the kill I had chosen.
No, it's not. I know which one you picked. and I picked that one just because I've never seen anything like that before. He got fisted by the judge all the way out his own mouth.
Yeah.
Like the judge crawled up his ass. Moving on.
Scene.
I'm going to go for the same.
Okay. But the shunting scene?
Yeah, the shunting scene.
Okay.
I feel like that pretty much says it all. That wraps up the entire movie.
Do you care if I elaborate on your kill?
Okay.
Okay, so this is what I was talking about at the beginning of the movie when I said one scene in particular scarred me for life. That was it, Blanchard's kill. Because, yes, up to that point, I had never seen anything like that, ever. And again, being an empathetic person, I always tend to put myself in the shoes of the person who this thing is happening to. And it's always been there, especially with, like, zombies, right? If you're that person that's getting eaten alive by zombies, putting yourself in the perspective of that person I cannot believe I'm going to reference Friday the 13th again. But the scene in, I guess it's the final chapter, where what's his face? He's getting killed by Jason in the basement and he's like, oh my God, he's killing me. That part used to, like, fuck with me a lot because I would always put myself in that perspective of being fully aware that you're meeting your demise. I can't imagine how fucked up that is. So same thing for Blanchard. imagine just being there, laying there completely helpless, and all these people just, because he wasn't, I mean, he wasn't a fat guy or anything, but he wasn't a small guy either. So imagine you're laying there and the people are just sucking everything out of you till there's almost nothing left.
They were sticking their hands in him.
Yeah.
Like under his skin.
Yeah. And then this guy starts coming toward you, and the actor did a really good job because he was giving his reaction the whole entire time, which made it even more uncomfortable. And just, again, that knowledge of you're sitting there and you're watching these acts being performed on you, and then you see this guy coming toward you and he's getting his hand all lubed up and he's like, oh no, or whatever, and I mean, sure, he doesn't say that, but yeah, God, that really, really fucked with my mind a lot. Like, it scared, I don't want to say scared me, but it really disturbed the shit out of me.
Yeah, he stretch Armstronged himself all the way up there. Yeah. All the way.
I just, oh man, I can't imagine going out that way. It's just so fucked up.
I don't want to imagine going out that way. Okay. So what are yours?
Let's see. Quote is going to be anything for society. I think that pretty much says it all right there. It's so few words, but it's so telling at the same time. Kill. I'm going to go with Ted Ferguson's. Like I said, I like that just one moment of somebody getting theirs, because Ted has been an over the top asshole bully throughout the film. And at the end, for him to be so confident that he's going to win, and to have Billy turn the tables on him by grabbing him by his own arm, shoving his own arm up his ass, because he says something about get familiar with this thumb because you're going to see a lot of it. And he turns the tables on him and he uses his own arm to shove up his ass. And then, yes, he also shoves his own arm, or his arm up there too, but...
He got double fisted.
Yes. Yes. Double penetration. Just not the way you expected to see it. But yeah. And then to grab him through the eye sockets and mouth and then pull him through inside out. That was just as fucked up and gross as it is. It's still a cheer-worthy moment because you're glad to see that guy get hit.
He did the same thing to him that Blanchard did, or that the judge did to Blanchard.
Yes.
Except the judge didn't turn him inside out.
Yes. And I remember thinking, do these people not have bones? Because it seemed like when he pulled him inside out, you would have seen his bones and organs and all of that. But no, he was like Oogie Boogie, right? It was just skin over a bunch of bugs. So, yeah. Scene. Scene is tough. Because Travis and I tend to not want to take things away from each other. So I guess I'm going to go with the scene where Milo and Clarissa's mom, Mrs. Carlin, show up to the party and a cop tries to stop them from, or security guard or somebody tries to stop them from going into the party. And he tells her, look, hair. And so she gets him into the bushes and she scalps him.
She pulled his toupee off.
That part,
that's why she was looking at it all confused.
I thought that part was pretty funny. So I will not take the shunting from Travis, although how anybody doesn't choose the shunting is beyond me, because it's such a wild scene. But I did thoroughly enjoy any scenes that Mrs. Carlin had in them, because she was just so fucking wacky. So anyway, Travis, marry, fuck, or kill society. You're gonna kill it, aren't you?
I'd love to kill it. I would love to kill it. Can I just like put it in jail instead of killing it? Here's the deal. I don't have any desire to ever see this film again, but...
That means you kill it by our definition.
Yeah. Okay, let me rephrase that. If I never saw this film again, I don't think I'd feel like I'm missing out on anything at all. I'd miss nothing. But if you put it on, I'll watch it. So maybe it's on probation.
My God.
Kill it. Okay. I kill it. Kill it with fire.
You can say it's okay to kill it.
Kill it with fire. That's my vote. Salt the earth. Salt the snail.
And somewhere Bill is clutching his pearls.
I'm sorry, Bill. We're covering this movie. It's your fault, Bill.
It's all your fault, Bill. I'm gonna say fuck. It's not one.
How much KY are you gonna use?
Oh my God, all of it. All of it by the truckload. This is not one that I watch very often at all. I, for probably the purposes of the shunting, it's one that I have to put years between watches. Yeah, it's not a casual viewing experience, I would say. You know, there's a lot of people that say, I can't watch this movie more than once, can't watch this movie more than once. And I'm like, I probably watched it 10 times this week, but this is not one of those films for me. Don't know why. It's a great movie. I think it's highly overlooked in the genre, but that being said, it's still not one that I can put on all the time. So just fuck for me.
Okay. Final thoughts?
If you have maybe heard of this film but have not really made it around to it yet, go ahead and give it a try, especially if you have an affinity for the 80s practical effects. This is, like I said, I can't say enough good things about it. If you're a fan of Screaming Mad George's work and you for some reason haven't made it around to this one yet, absolutely. If you're a fan of body horror, if you're a fan of movies that, you know, like, again, we're on the kick of Eat the Rich. If you're on, you want to kind of stay in that avenue, this is a good one to go with that. I would say, yeah, pair it up with some of those Eat the Rich horror films, you know, like The Menu and Ready or Not, Saltburn. You know, I feel like this is one of those that you could probably put on with one of those and have a good time.
I think you could watch this one first and then watch those other ones. So you get a feeling of triumph after you watch the other ones. Like, so, see, we staged an uprising and we won.
Yeah. But that being said,
Samara Weaving won.
I don't think he would suggest it to anyone in polite company.
This is the kind of film I would suggest to someone to fuck with them. Like, you've got to watch this movie. It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not a movie I could watch with Aiden in the room with me. Ever.
I felt uncomfortable watching it with you in the room with me.
Like, it's one thing to watch Barry Keoghan dance around nude for like 5 minutes straight with your son in the room. But, you know, double fisted penetration. Yeah, that's not something you want to sit with your child with.
There were
watch.
Three fistings that happened in this film. Two of them were simultaneous. All right. So next week, we're going to cover our first Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
Our first ever Kevin Smith, yeah. And still body horror and equally disturbing.
Now, if you're sitting right now going, Kevin Smith, the guy who made Clerks?
The best movie ever.
He's never made a horror film. Oh, yes, he has.
Hold his lunchbox. Hold my blunt. Because we're going to cover Tusk. I don't know if I'm ready for this. Like, it's just a weird ass movie up to a certain point, and then it's, oh my God.
Yeah, it's another one that I would say is,
it's disturbing.
Highly disturbing.
Tusk is disturbing.
Yes. I will say, maybe I should save it for next week, but I'm just going to get it out of the way before I forget it in a week. Isabel watched this movie with me, and for anyone who has seen Tusk already, knows it pretty well, there is a scene it's a scene with Johnny Depp, and he's talking about a missing hockey player by the name of Gregory Gumtree. Isabel was cackling for how many times the name Gregory Gumtree was said in the scene. It felt like every millisecond that name was said. So she was laughing her entire ass off over and over and over. However, when she gets to what the movie is known for, she was very unhappy with me. And anytime I bring that movie up or say the name Gregory Gumtree, she gets mad at me.
And rightfully so.
So yeah, we'll be talking about that next week. And if you're feeling generous, please consider stopping by patreon.com and consider sponsoring us for a small price or a smaller one.
If you feel like you've got too much money and you can't wait to get rid of some.
If you're walking away from the day going, I got a dollar, I got a dollar, I got a dollar, hey, you know, consider, you know, sponsoring us.
All right, that's enough. We're sitting here shaking our tin cup. It's fine.
You know, the way every podcaster does in their show.
Feels dirty.
Anyway, until next week, thank you for listening to Dead and Married. I'm Ashley.
I'm Travis.
Take care, guys.
Bye.